Hey everyone, it's Aisha, and guess what? We have another live show coming to you very soon. If you're going to be at the Sundance Film Festival next month, we are putting together a great, exciting live show in collaboration with the Slate Culture Gabfest. It's happening on January 23rd, 2018, and you can find tickets for the show at slate.com/live. Look forward to seeing y'all in Park City.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our year-end episode of Represent. If you've been listening this whole year, you may have noticed, or maybe you didn't notice, but Marilyn and I have put out, like, so many episodes. We've only taken off, I think, 2 weeks this year, and the second week is going to be next week.
Yeah, technically, at this point, we've only taken off 1 week.
Yes, and some of those weeks we've had extra episodes. So we've been very, very busy, and there's been a lot happening with representation, a lot of conversations. It's been crazy, and this year is very exhausting, but I'm so happy to say that this year we are reuniting the year-end team from last year.
Woo!
Yay! Yay! Welcome, everyone. We have Tiffany Vasquez, who is a host at TCM, a Saturday afternoon host at TCM.
Hello.
Welcome, Tiffany.
So glad to be back.
Yes. And we have Antonia Sarajito, who is a producer at Latino USA.
Welcome. Hello.
Yay. And finally, we have Alex Jung, a culture writer over at Vulture. Welcome back.
Yay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we're all, I think we've established that we're all sitting in the exact same spots in the exact same room as last year. Confirmed. A little bit of deja vu. And we're going to start with a quiz. Which I know Tiffany is very excited.
Yeah. Did you study?
Ready to lose again, gracefully. No.
For those who may not have heard our show last year, Tiffany was very bad.
Very bad.
Aisha! I got them all wrong.
Drag her.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, my quiz was like actually really... Like,
it was so hard.
It's kind of hard. This one, I think, will be a little bit easier. So, yeah, it'll be good. I'll start with Antonia.
Okay.
So this first round, there's going to be 3 rounds. You'll each get 1 question per round. And this first round will be a bunch of people responding to some controversies about the way in which they handled some subject matter in their film or TV shows. Actually, I think these are all films. And you'll have to guess who said this quote. So I will start off.
And there's people defending their
work. They're defending their work. Yes, yes. So this first question, or this first quote. I did not want to perpetuate an objectionable stereotype where facts and history supported my choice of setting the story of these white women in complete isolation after the slaves had escaped. So this is multiple choice.
I know who it is already, though. Can I just say it?
Wow. But I had some
good. Okay, go Tracy Flick.
Say your options, okay?
Wow, sassy here.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I told you this is going to be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Even Tiffany,
I'm like
was
a
nodding.
Big fan of her, so I know.
Are you mad that you didn't get this question?
I'm furious.
Oh, no.
No, it's okay.
Okay. It's fine. So, A. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the creators of the proposed HBO series Confederate.
Oh, this is a good question. I'm glad you're reading the options because I'm proud of you for mm-hmm. the way it was designed.
Okay. Yes. Also, I want people to remember that so much other stuff happened this year.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good call.
B, Sofia Coppola, director of The Beguiled. Or C, Joe Pekaski, who is a co-creator of the now canceled Underground.
B.
Yes, it is Sofia Coppola, who decided, we talked about this on the show, but who decided that she was going to make a movie set during the Civil War in which no black people were anywhere to be found.
True.
And she used like one line of dialogue to explain it away. Which was the slaves escaped. There are a lot of problems, I think, with that, especially since it seems sort of like a cop-out and a way for her to basically, what's the word, jump in front of any controversy that might come if she actually did include black women or black people in the narrative. And the original book in the first movie that starred Clint Eastwood that was came in the 70s, they both included a black character. Different results.
Tiffany, have you seen that movie, the original one?
Yes.
I haven't seen it. Was it good? Or like... It's crazy,
more,
right?
It's more filmed like exploitation-y,
yeah,
which is an interesting way to just look at both of them together. I did enjoy them as a double feature just for their differences and similarities.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're both a really fascinating study, and I mm-hmm. suggest people see both. So that was my very easy question for you, Antonio.
Yes, I have a point. Okay.
All right. Alex, uh-huh. on to you.
Okay.
This quote. I know what it is to be the quote-unquote other very, very well. My film and my filmmaking is all about asking questions about how the system pits us against each other. If anything, this movie is about how we are eating each other. Is it A, Anna Lily Amir Poor, director of The Bad Batch, B, Darren Aronofsky, director of Mother, or C, Kathryn Bigelow, director of Detroit?
Damn, this is hard.
Yeah, this is really hard.
Oh, shit. I must be so bad at like guesstimating what might be hard and what might be easy.
Well, I appreciate that no one else seems to know either. I'm going to guess C because of the general theme, but I have no idea.
It is A, Anna Lily Amir Poor, director of The Bad Batch.
All right.
But
I don't even know what that movie is. Is that bad? What's that movie?
It came and went.
It was a smaller indie.
So yeah. She's the director of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yeah.
Or A Girl Walks Home at Night. And this was her follow-up feature, and it caused some, there was some controversy when someone confronted her, a black woman confronted her at a screening earlier this year, because the one black female character in the movie is, like, kind of murdered senselessly and
Whoa.
Blatantly.
Whoa.
And just, and also, actually, a couple of the black characters are murdered very just like that, in ways that other characters are not.
Yeah.
And so she was called into question of, like, her depiction of the black characters in the film. And Detroit, as we know, is just... that was a mess.
I can't believe she did that.
I had no desire to watch it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either because I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah. If I could have left, I would have. I think Jamel Bowie, my colleague, came uh-huh. on and we talked about it. And I think he did leave.
good for him.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm tired of this idea that, like, we need to watch the bad thing to critique it. Sometimes I'm just like, I know it's bad. I don't need to watch it. Like, I have no need to subject myself to this, like, bullshit. And I'm good.
Yeah. We have so many hours in our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, let's watch things right. that are actually good.
Yeah.
And, like, interesting and smart.
Agreed. Mm-hmm.
Well said.
That is my 2018 resolution.
Woo!
Okay, number three. This is for you, Tiff.
All right.
Who said the following? Diversity is important in Hollywood, and I would never want to feel like I was playing a character that was offensive. Also, having a franchise with a female protagonist driving it is such a rare opportunity. Is it A, Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman of Wonder Woman, B, Charlize Theron of The Fate of the Furious, or C, Scarlett Johansson of Ghost in the Shell?
Here we go. I don't know. I'm going to guess A.
It is C, Scarlett Johansson, Ghost in the Shell. I thought that was
easy. You both
easy.
Knew that?
I suspected it was C.
Yeah, I mean too.
I was thinking either A right. or C, definitely not B.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Scarlett Johansson.
Keep the streak.
I like this though, you're consistent.
Yeah, I am. If I'm anything, I'm consistent.
So yeah, Scarlett Johansson, as I think was made very, we all know about this because it was very big, oh, 9 months ago. This year seems so long.
Yeah.
But yeah. She starred in the live action version of Ghost in the Shell, mm-hmm. and there was already uproar over the fact that she was cast. And then, of course, spoiler, but you don't want to see this movie anyway. But of course, it turns out that her character finds out that she had been created as a droid based. She was basically inhabiting a Japanese character. Like her character was actually.
Her brain is
a Japanese.
Her soul is Japanese.
Yes, her soul is Japanese. Her body is now the shell.
I like legit stayed away from this one too. Yeah. I was like, yeah, right. I did not.
Right.
You were smart. Anyway, that was the answer. Yes. So round two is going to be sort of miscellaneous. Not so much a theme, but I think these will also be. We'll see.
I think predicting is not the way
yeah.
to go.
Yeah, there's no point in predicting at this point. All right, Antonia, back to you. So this is a spoiler. I know I'm really bad at spoilers sometimes, so I'm just going to tell everyone who's listening, if you have not If you don't want spoilers for two shows that are two sitcoms that are very popular.
Oh, crap. I'm screwed. Okay,
you probably want to pause it or like skip ahead by about 30 seconds. Okay. Which of these TV characters did not come out as bisexual on TV this year?
Do you know it already?
A, Adam from Jane the Virgin. B, Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Or C, Zoe from Black-ish.
Wait, can I pause and just like Tiffany's face right now?
I know.
Sorry.
Tiffany, at least you should feel just like you're just being screwed over by the system here.
That's cool. Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah,
that's so
true. It is the system. It's flawed.
It's fine.
Okay, so I know it's not B. That's the only show of those that I watch. What was the first option?
Adam from Jane the Virgin. Adam is Jane's current boyfriend. At least I think he's current because I'm like three episodes behind.
I haven't been keeping up with Jane the Virgin, and I love that show. I'm going to say C.
You're correct.
Wow.
Indeed. So far, Antonia is 2-for-2. Yes, Zoe from Black-ish, as far as I know, has not come out as bi. I don't suspect.
Who knows what'll happen on Grown-ish?
Who knows what'll happen on Grown-ish?
Yeah. Oh, they're making a show called Grown-ish?
Yeah. Yes.
That's fun.
She's going to
college. It's coming out next year on Freeform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So, yes, Adam recently came out as bisexual, and Rosa also came out as bisexual. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it's been a better year for bisexual characters in general. I haven't taken much, like, there's a lot of shows that I do not watch, but I know that it has been covered a lot more with more frequency than it has been in the past. There are other shows like Riverdale that feature bisexual characters.
Fun fact about Rosa, mm-hmm. the actress is like the one famous Argentine American. So
and actually bisexual.
Is she?
Is she really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I love Rosa. She's one of my favorites.
She's amazing.
Beatrice.
Yeah.
So dope.
All right. On to Alex. This is another quote, actually.
Oh God. Okay, great.
I'm going to get this one. I feel it
in my fingers. Yes. All right. I would say it is an honor to do this, but that would be an alternative fact. It is not. No one wanted to do this, so of course it falls in the hands of an immigrant. That's how it always goes down.
Okay.
Is it A, Hasan Minhaj, B, Lin-Manuel Miranda, or C, Aziz Ansari?
That would be A, Hasan Minhaj about the White House Correspondents' Center.
Yeah, look at that.
Thank you.
That is correct. He had the thankless job of working the White House Correspondents' Center, which Trump didn't even attend. But I thought he did a really good job.
He did do a good job.
And everyone should also check out Homecoming King, his Netflix special, which is just friggin' amazing. And it's wonderful. Ooh, okay.
Yay.
Tiffany.
2017 is saved.
Yes. Ed Skrein. If I pronounce it correct.
poor Tiffany.
Okay, Ed Skrein. I'm just going to go with that. I'm sorry if I pronounced it correctly.
All of our BFF, Ed Skrein.
It's Skrein?
I have no idea who this
actually
is.
Don't.
So
I do know who it is. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Actor Ed Skrein did something perhaps no white person has done before. After backlash in response to his casting in a role that was originally conceived as a person of color in the source material that the movie is based on, he stepped down out of respect for quote-unquote cultural accuracy. What movie did he back out of?
Oh.
Is it A, Hellboy, B, Crazy Rich Asians, or C, The Avengers Infinity War?
Oh, man. I remember this, but I have no idea what it was from anymore. I think I'm going to say, what were they again?
A is Hellboy, B, Crazy Rich Asians, or C, The Avengers Infinity War.
A.
Yes!
You did it!
Confetti is falling from the ceiling. That is correct. I don't think any white person at least has done this before publicly. He was just like, look, people are not happy with this. Maybe I shouldn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And props to him. I mean, this is a small, like, you know, small. Well, no, it's not a small thing because he gave up a job. But I think that, you know, we should give props to the white people who are like doing some good.
Yes, I remember reading that and I was just like, whoa, this is crazy that no one's done this before. Also kind of not, because people just tend to care about themselves and their own careers more than anything else. And yeah. I mean, I can't even put
that much blame on that. But
yeah, I also love how he just like turned it on the casting directors and the director now. And he's just like, OK, now what are you going to do? Because you can't replace me with another white guy.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
What a power move.
And one of the producers, even after the controversy started, said that it shouldn't be a big deal. And, you know, we cast the best person for the best part.
The best all this person. Bullshit. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Mm.
Ugh. All right, so this final round is really fun, and you'll see why. So, Antonio.
Yes.
You've seen Get Out, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, in Get Out, at what point should Chris have realized he needed to get the heck out of the Armitage's home?
Oh, my God.
Is it A, when Rose's dad said he would have voted for Obama a third time? B, when the groundskeeper bolted at him out of nowhere in the middle of the night? Or C, when a freaked out Logan, played by Lakeith Stanfield, tells him to.
I'm the earliest one, which was the Obama one. I mean, before that. Is this a trick question?
It is indeed.
Wait, is the answer just what you think it is?
No.
No, oh. He should have like never gone with that lady till she was weird.
Exactly. But if you had to choose. No. So that yes. Any of those could be correct,
right.
Because at any point, he really should have just gotten the heck out of the Armitage's house.
Yeah.
But yes, those are all correct. Surprise!
I do feel like when Lakeith Stanfield told him to leave, I think that's really when he
needed
to.
Isn't that when
he
decides to leave? No.
No, because then he goes up.
That's crazy.
Because if I remember correctly, then he goes up in the room. This is before he encounters the maid. And he goes up in the room and he's like, dude, like something weird is going on here to his best friend over the phone. And then she's like, no.
She's so good in that scene.
So good.
She is so good.
All right, Alex.
Yes.
Should Oliver have eaten the peach and Call Me By Your Name?
Well, I literally wrote a think piece about why he should have. So you know my answer.
Yes, but let me read off the things anyway. A. Yes, it was a tame, watered-down way of depicting gay intimacy and desire. B, yes, it was a total cop-out and another example of a movie being afraid of depicting explicit gay attraction. Or C, yes. I have yet to read an argument for not having him bite into the beach.
Right.
Like, I looked for it, and I was like, no one seems to argue this.
Who would do that?
Yeah.
Right.
So, for context, for people who haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, and I don't think this isn't a spoiler, it's just a moment that happens, but, like, and I won't get too explicit, but essentially, something happens with a peach, and Armie Hammer's character, Oliver, he picks it up, but he doesn't bite into it.
He dips a finger into it.
Oh, right. He does that.
And
yes.
He tastes it.
Yes.
Which is not the same. Which I'm just like, if you're going to do that.
Might as well.
Just eat the fucking peach.
Might as well.
Yeah. The director has defended it, but like, I don't know.
Sure. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I just think he should have eaten it. I just don't understand why you didn't.
I also love that, like, directors today feel like he, like, had to, like, defend that decision. You're, like, also, like, as an audience, clearly people are having fun with it. Like, what is this?
Right.
This was a very important part. You're like, come on.
It's not that serious, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think, like, because I'm such a big fan of the book by Andre Aciman. And, you know, it's one of the most memorable scenes from the book. And there's a very specific reason why he eats the peach, because it's all about like being one, right? Like literally like uniting your like bodies and genetic material and all of that together in one fashion, right? And eating the peach is symbolic of that. And to me, it feels like a cop out to not do that in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
My answer would be, I guess, just a simple yes, because I have a very complex answer for why I think he should have eaten it.
Well, but everyone should check out his piece on Vulture that you wrote. All right, final question for Tiffany. The Dave Matthews Band song Crash, which features prominently in Lady Bird. Have you seen Lady Bird?
Yes.
Okay, great. Is A song from my adolescence that I remember everyone loving. B, a creepy song about a guy stalking a woman outside her window. Or C, a creepy song about a guy wanting to dominate a woman and not necessarily in a consensual S&M way.
this is Dave Matthews Band has eluded me for my whole life. And
And I do remember that song very well in Lady Bird, but I'm going to say C just because it doesn't speak to me, that song. Never has. And yeah, and I'm just going to assume it's the creepiest one possible or the worst option possible.
It's just sad to me how I heard that song so much when I was in middle school and high school because everyone I knew was obsessed with Dave Matthews Band. Mm. And every time he came to town, it was like, we're going to Dave. Like, we're going to Dave.
Wow.
I never went, but I think that's where people like would hook up and drink when we were there in middle school, high school. But I didn't realize that the lyrics of the song were so damn creepy until
I do not know the lyrics of the song because I know it's very, very well.
For a second, I thought you gave her like the one real question. Like, that is
no.
That actually would have been hilarious.
No, yeah, the lyrics are weird. Looking out a window at her, like peering at her, it's weird. And
okay,
yeah, it's just weird. So that's the quiz.
That was fun.
Was it fun?
Yeah,
it was fun.
I hope so. All right, so we did that. Now I wanted to move to, we each brought a plus and a delta for the year. Let's start with our pluses. Or should we start with our deltas? I feel like let's start with the deltas because I want to end on a happier note.
Yes.
Okay, great.
And this year has sucked.
Yeah.
So,
this year has been terrible.
Yeah.
I think we should congratulate all of ourselves for getting through it.
Like, yeah.
We all still have like the same job we had a year ago.
That's true.
We all look great. No one can see us, but we look amazing. So I think we need to be really proud of that.
Okay. So why don't we this time start with Tiffany. What is your delta for this year?
I had so much trouble picking one because it's just... Where do I even begin?
Just shit on top of shit.
Yeah,
top of shit.
Yes. So much. Yeah. So I was just thinking of one of the more recent examples, which is that no woman was nominated for a Golden Globe for directing this when the nominations were announced this week. And then I went back to think of all the things I watched this year. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot how disappointed I was by the Callie storyline in Stranger Things. 11 sister and her group, and it's the only group of mostly people of color or all people of color, and yep. It was just like so weirdly handled and treated where I was just confused because I thought something so much better was going to happen with her. So I was very disappointed by that.
I haven't I'm going to admit that I still haven't gotten into Stranger Things yet. Mm. But
it's fine.
I haven't seen it either.
See,
I think the first season's great.
Yeah.
And I think it should have ended there.
Ooh.
That's how I feel about Big Little Lies.
Yes. Why are you doing a second season?
Yeah,
it wasn't meant to be like that. The first one was great. Mm-hmm. Leave it alone. Mm-hmm. Don't listen to the internet. The internet is not always good.
Well, I thought the Stranger Things was supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, that, I think they always wanted it to be a show, but I think they should have made it a limited series. I was just like, oh, that was a great, like, 8-episode.
Nicely packaged.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just leave it. Let us be happy with that. And then they just have to keep on dragging it out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Sorry, anyway.
Well, Antonia, what about you? What is your delta for this year?
So my delta is the live action Beauty and the Beast. Because
drag it.
Yes.
I want us to step back for a second and think about the plot of Beauty and the Beast. It is a story of a woman who meets a literal monster who has like caged her father, then cages her, and then she gives him a chance. Because, like, maybe he's, like, read a book or something. I'm like, what are we teaching young girls? Like, are we teaching them, like, give that guy that, like, not only is he just, like, you don't know if he's a beast, he's presenting as Beast. And then I was just, like, thinking this week about, like, that viral story cat person, which I could not believe a short story went viral. That, to me, was, like, shocking. I read it. I find it to be, like, horrific. And I understand why people relate, but I'm also, like, horrified by it. And then I'm, like, having a realization where I'm like, yeah, because that girl watched Beauty and the Beast growing up and was like, oh, that you never know. This literal gross man could be secretly a prince. Like, enough. We have to stop.
Isn't that the plot of like every Kevin James?
Okay. And then yes,
the
shower
plot
movie.
Of almost everything
it's
I've
every
ever watched.
Freaking like kids movie is this like you never know. Like no, you know. He is a beast. So that makes me really angry and I can't believe they even rebooted it. And then I had a thought. Which was another thing where I've been thinking a lot. It's really insidious in how so many Disney movies, there is no mom. Like, I, like, was listing them. Like, there's no mom in Little Mermaid, in Pocahontas, Lion King, Bambi. Like, you name it.
Well, the mom's
the
there,
mom's
but then she dies.
In Bambi.
Oh, sorry. I actually...
She's shot by man.
Right.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. Bambi's actually not listed in this... scooted out of the list that I just said. But the deal... It's really weird because then, like, motherhood and moms become this, like, backdrop. Literally, you, like, take away the presence of woman and, like, you have this, like, patriarchal society where the mom is dead.
Right.
It's so crazy to me. And, like, I just really think that, like, if I have to see another, like, misunderstood male brooding character, I just, like, can't deal with it anymore. And I think that it's cool. I mean, obviously what's happening right now with women is, like, the biggest story of the year. It's like I think it's exceptional what's going on, frankly. But I think it's this idea that, like, just because you're like an awkward guy or like misunderstood, like, no, like, that's bad. You can't be a dick. Mm-hmm. Period. Stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's because we've been fueled with or like even like Twilight is the same crap.
Ugh.
Like, it's like only she gets him. No, he's weird. Stop. Don't hang out with him. Anyway.
I mean, in the context of all the crap that's happened these last couple of months, Beauty and the Beast does seem even more insidious.
Alex.
Yeah.
You are a Delta.
My Delta is not something I feel as strongly about.
That's okay. We take lukewarm and... red piping hot.
Right.
Deltas.
Well, it's more just something that I'm thinking is like something that I would like to see change, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that is what Delta means, right? And so, you know, the film Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri is gaining more and more steam after the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards or the SAG nominations because it picked up a lot. And it seems like it's starting to become one of the front runners probably for the Oscar race too. And it's, for people who haven't seen it, it's a film by Martin McDonagh, I think.
Who directed In Bruges. I think he's best known for In Bruges.
Right. Yeah. And it stars Frances McDormand as a woman in a small town on a vengeance mission, essentially, to get the police to find the person who raped and killed her daughter. And so she takes out these three billboards that excoriates the sheriff, essentially asking him why hasn't this been solved yet. And, you know, I think it's interesting in the sense that I think people are starting to glom onto the film right now as like the movie of the moment that we need in this post-Weinstein era in Hollywood. But I think at the same time, it like illustrates a lot of the problems with that, both that as a symbol and then also the post-Weinstein moment a bit to me. The conversation has been dominated by white women. And as Jane Fonda sort of pointed out, she said, like, the reason why it's getting so much attention is because everyone, the victims are beautiful and white and famous.
Yeah.
And that's not to discount what happened or any of that or that it's a very fucked up patriarchal system that's at work. But I do think that we can work at being creating a more inclusive and intersectional understanding of sexual assault generally. Mm-hmm. And I think that conversation is necessary and important to look at the ways in which certain people are left out of it. But Three Billboards is kind of interesting as an example because it is a movie that is very bad about race in like very sort of obvious, clumsy ways. And I feel like is illustrative of the ways in which why Hollywood would also like be like, yes, this is the movie that we're picking because it's kind of like it ignores the black characters in these like really almost hilarious ways. Like I have you seen it?
I have.
I don't know if we were in this. I think we were in the same screening when we saw
it.
Yeah,
I think we were actually. I didn't get to talk to you afterwards.
Right.
But yeah.
But there's a scene where her black friend gets basically like taken to jail by the cops. You don't really see her.
It's a way of like threatening her.
Right.
And she works with her her, the black woman as right. well. So like she takes, they take her in so that like to say like you need to stop screwing with us or we're going to start taking everyone you know like and putting them in jail.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's another black man who's just like another sort of like very small character who's like helping with the billboards, like putting them up. And then the two black characters meet. And then the next scene, they're on a date together. And everyone in the theater just laughs. And I think there was like a moment, like moments like that where you're just like, what is going on?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I liked the movie after seeing it, unlike a lot of people. Now that I've read all the criticisms, I'm like, oh, yeah. And I chalk it up to Frances McDormand is a hell of a drug. Like,
yeah.
She's such a good actress.
She was,
it's
like,
crazy.
So, like, I really, really liked her in that role. And I thought there were very funny moments and sort of witty banter back mm-hmm. and forth. But I totally get the criticisms of what it's really doing underneath. And Martin McDonagh, like, let's be honest, he's like, he's a white guy, but he's also a white guy who's
not American.
Who's not American. So, like, he's coming into this world from, like, way on the outside.
Totally.
So, yeah, all of your points, I think, are very, very valid. And I hope to see more of that, too.
Right.
Or less of that, more thoughtful, exploratory explorations of race and of sexuality and that sort of thing.
It's really interesting that Harvey Weinstein has only responded to two accusations, and it was Salma and Lupita.
Yep.
I thought that was like really like weird. I was like, what?
Yeah. It's, yes. Well, that actually brings us very easily into my delta, which is the fact that besides Salma and Lupita, at least in Hollywood, all of the women who have come forward, for the most part, have been white. And we mentioned this a little bit on the episode we did on Weinstein with Dana Stevens and Susan Matthews. But I think it's now been like 2 months since we did that episode, and it's still very much a conversation dominated by white women. And it says to me a lot. It says two things. It says, one, the fact that the access that women of color are allowed is not the same. They are not getting those chances to even meet, not that I want them to meet, but like to meet the Harvey Weinsteins. Selma Hayek is a rare example. Lupita is a very rare example. And it's really depressing that that's the fact. On the other hand, I know that some of the biggest women of color right now have stories. They have to. Because you can't, like, it's happening to everyone. It is. And I think they're even more vulnerable. And I think that it might be partially they're worried about their careers because they are, even, you could be Taraji, you could be Kerry Washington, but you still don't necessarily have the same cachet as Charlize, as Ashley Judd even. Like, that's just the truth. Then also, like, these are women who have also, especially in the early parts of their careers, worked a lot with black directors and directors of color. And I think there's this concern that they're, you know, you don't want to call out a black man and bring a powerful person of color down. We're seeing a bit of a change now as of this recording. And I will say we're recording this on December 14th. So there is a very good chance that maybe someone else will come out or something else will happen. But as of this recording, just yesterday, the news about Russell Simmons, this wasn't news, but now there's been like something like 6 or 7 more women have come out on the record against him in addition to the 2 or 3 that had come out before, accusing him of not just even harassment, but actual rape. And so there's one powerful person, black person. There's also Tavis Smiley. There's been a couple of rumblings from PBS. So we're seeing that. But all these women are also, they're women of color, but they're women of color who are not on the same level as someone like Kerry Washington or Taraji P. Henson or Viola. So I don't know. It just concerns me. It just bothers me. And it saddens me because they have stories. And I think that the conversation is obviously going to continue to be dominated by white voices until these other voices speak up. And I know there's so many factors involved, not just your career, but also like it must hurt. And if you have experienced that, And, you know, women of color have come out in other industries, including within our industry of media, WNYC. A lot of those women have been women of color who have come out against John Hockenberry at The Takeaway. And also in that Time Magazine Person of the Year, there were lots of women of color in the hotel industry and restaurant and elsewhere.
And the woman who started the Me Too movement is a black
Tarana,
woman.
Tarana Burke is the one who started the Me Too movement. And so, you know, women, black women and women of color are doing it. But in Hollywood, I just think there's this shade happening. And I hope the shade is lifted. Well, this is why I'm glad we didn't end on the Delta. Tiffany, what is your plus?
This is not a joke. This is not a joke. I'm afraid they read the wrong thing. This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture. Moonlight, Best Picture.
I forgot that was this year.
I know. I almost picked it, but I was like, we've talked about Moonlight so much.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you're doing it because I'm not the one talking about it.
It seems so long ago. It seems so long ago. But on February 26th, 2017, the right picture won the best picture at the Academy Awards.
Indeed. What a crazy night.
And in such an insane way.
It's such so bittersweet.
It was very bittersweet. That night I was just like, I was in LA working for Giphy. We were live gifting the Oscars. So that got crazy because we were gifting them a certain way. And then it just switched up all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
So we were handling that. But at the same time, I was just crying because it was just such an incredible feeling, especially because I have I know the Oscars and award season. And honestly, everything is so problematic. But I still love film history so much, and I still love watching past Oscars from like every year, and it still is so magical to me, and it still means so much to me. And for it to happen in that way, it was just incredible. When you see Trevante Rhodes's reaction, when you see Barry Jenkins' reaction, it just did something to me, and it was so incredible in a year where we knew things were going to be really bad. And since I was in LA, it ended early. I didn't have to deal with New York time. So we left the office or the house we were gifting in and went straight to see Get Out at Arclight.
Nice.
And the 1-2 punch of that for me was just like, I'm surrounded by art and excellence, and this is just good stuff right now, and this is a good night. And my favorite thing of all of this is that this past year at the TCM Classic Film Festival, it's in the middle of Hollywood, so it's like an annoying place to be for a lot of people, but a lot of the events are at the TCL Chinese Theater and all of the surrounding theaters. I went, as soon as I checked into my hotel and was settled, I walked over to Lowe's to the theater where all of the Best Picture Oscar winners are on display. It's that super touristy attraction everyone goes to, and they see everything from Wings 1929 up till and then 2017. And I just ran over to the stairs where 2017 was listed, and just seeing Moonlight listed there among the Best Picture winners was just, for me, it was just, I don't know what heaven's going to look like if I get there, but I feel like it looked like that. I just, it was like the most beautiful thing I'd seen. And it was just a great moment. And I hope many more like that come.
Aww. Me too. Although who knows? Yeah. Three billboards might win.
That's for sure.
And then it's like Crash all over again.
Yeah. Oh.
Sorry to bring it back down. Antonia, what is your plus?
You're the one who always said a person's life needs to matter. Okay. Was it all just bullshit?
No, it's not. And I'm not going to give you some long song and dance about how precious and sacred your beautiful body is. Mm-hmm. But it is not for sale, Abigail. Not ever. No matter what cause, no matter what cost. And one day, you are going to look back at this, probably pretty soon, and think, what the fuck was I thinking? Why was I going to fuck up my life like that?
It'd be nice to be so right.
I'm not right.
So perfect.
I'm not fucking perfect.
To be honest, my actual Delta, or no, sorry, plus is Coco. Like, I think Coco I think Coco should win Best Picture of the Year.
I love Coco.
I was going to put that as my plus,
best
too.
Movies I've ever seen in my whole life. Mm-hmm. Like, I think just as a cinematic, like, visually, it's insane. The story is, like, so gorgeous. It meant so much to me. I watched with my family, and we all cried and hugged each other for like 20 minutes. It was one of the most beautiful moments I've had with my family. But since I've already talked about that on the show.
Yes, you have. Go listen to that episode.
I picked something else, which I agree. I don't think it should have a second season. Right. But I think Big Little Lies was one of the first times I saw like female relationships depicted in a way that felt crazy real to me, and I really enjoyed it. And I love Reese Witherspoon's relationship to her daughter. We were talking about how Disney, like, there's like lack of mother. This is like showing motherhood in, I think, a way that's very
so
relatable.
Many ways, yeah.
And I also think Nicole Kidman's relationship to Alexander Skarsgård is some of the best acting I've ever seen. And I understand. Yeah. I think the show is really problematic, and I think that Zoe Kravitz's character is not well developed. She comes out of nowhere at the end, and you're like, what? Mm-hmm. But I thought that like Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman's acting performance was like so exhilarating to watch. And it was just a really well-written show. Like, it was just like, it was like eating like mango sorbet or something. You're like, I was like, this is amazing. I don't know.
I love it. I love Big Little Lies. Mm. Yeah. Alex?
Monsieur le proviseur, vous refusez d'installer des distributeurs de préservatifs dans votre lycée, alors que même votre ministre de tutelle les préconise.
Je vais pas discuter avec vous, monsieur.
Vous faites de la résistance.
Je vais vous demander
à une
de quitter cet établissement.
Santé publique.
So I have no idea what they were saying. And I cannot translate it for you. But I guess I picked a pretty obscure one or a little more esoteric one, but it's BPM.
I'm planning to see that tomorrow.
It's so good.
I've been waiting for that. Yeah.
It's like, it's truly, it was my favorite film of the year, I think. It's about ACT UP in Paris in the early 90s by a director, who Robin Campillo, who was a part of ACT UP for like a decade in his life. And he sort of just infuses his memories and his experiences and the people that he knew into this film of activists who are like, many of them are HIV positive and they're fighting for their lives. And it's so good. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I'm heard nothing but amazing things about it, and I cannot wait to see it.
It's like, yeah, it's like one of the best films I've seen about activism. It's one of the best films I've seen about, like,
and
depicting...
And that's hard to do,
yeah,
a good film about activism. It's
right.
Really hard to do.
Yeah, because it can get tedious, too, in a way, and I think people want to try to make it sexy in ways that it's not, and I just love the movie, and I think it's incredible. And it has, like, a very strong spirit to it, and it's not, I don't know, it doesn't give a fuck about what you think or, like, how it should present itself. It doesn't want to be, like, the good gay. It's about being angry and mad and furious and, like, wanting to take back power. And I think there's just something really inspirational about watching it, too, in this current political moment, because it sort of reminds you that, like, these are people who fought like they had no, like, that they could die tomorrow. And sometimes I feel like that's how we need to fight, you know?
Amen.
Wow.
I guess it's my turn.
This is going to sound a little crazy, but I need to get off the plane. I bought a ticket to go to L.A. when I was in New York. But I'm just remembering now that everyone in L.A. either hates me and or thinks I'm crazy. So New York isn't my home, but L.A. isn't either. So all I need you to do is just drop me off in, like, Ohio or Idaho, in a cornfield somewhere.
So, I mean, this is a very low point for this character, but I chose my plus this year is, I think that I saw so many amazing, despite all the fact that the stats for people creating and directing on TV when it comes to women and people of color are very low, I saw so many great depictions on screen of female characters. And that character you just heard is Rebecca Bunch on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I love. And this season, she kind of reaches her nadir. she attempts suicide to some extent because she's sort of spiraled out of control. But the way in which the show leads up to that and I think has dealt with it since has been really, really smart and not afraid to like not afraid to go in for the kill, but also treats her character sensitively. And I've seen other characters like that. A few that I just kind of wanted to name check were there's a great episode of Blackish this season where Diane gets her period. And the way in which, like, the fact that they call it a period, for one thing, I think I can't really think of any, like, sitcoms on Netflix TV where they actually, like, call it a period. Maybe I'm just imagining that that's a taboo, but, like, it seems like something I've never really heard. But it's all about this, her being this diabolical. She's already a diabolical character. If you watch it, she's, like, got this ongoing thing with, one of Dre's, her dad's co-workers, where she like basically says, I'm gonna kill you. Like, and it's really funny because it's a sitcom, but she gets her period and she's like even worse than usual. And so the way they handle it and the way she learns about it and her, all of like every woman in the family comes in the room, so like her both her grandmothers are there, her mom's there, and then her older sister's there, and they're all like, these are our period stories, this is how terrible it was the first time we got it. And it's just like such a lovely like just seeing all of these female characters, and like Big Little Lies is another one. And I also want to shout out Denise's coming out in Master of None, played by Lena Waithe, the Thanksgiving episode.
That episode was amazing. Still, like, right, that did happen this year.
So yeah.
See? I thought of it, but then I was like, no, that's last year. But no. That's because this year has been the longest year.
Even The Deuce, which we haven't really talked about on the show, but every, like, so all the female characters, I think, either they're really fleshed out or they, I think they will be fleshed out eventually.
Wait, they're doing another season of The Deuce?
Yeah.
Yes. For sure. I just think that it's been a really great year for female characters, and I'm excited that it's happened. So now we'll move on to our final segment. We'll hear our predictions first from last year and see if they've come true, and then we'll get into our predictions for next year. Alex, why don't we start with you?
I think that Viola Davis is going to get her EGOT.
That was good. God well, damn it, that's going
to
be mine.
So she just needs to read a book on tape. And so hopefully she gets that going next year because she, fingers crossed, will win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for Fences. So I was right. She did win, which was obviously not a real hard one to try to predict.
Eh,
but
you
so
never know.
It's true. It's true. So she is now 3/4 of the way
to an EGOT. EOT.
Yeah.
She's an ego.
No, EOT.
EOT.
She doesn't have a Grammy.
She doesn't have a Grammy.
Sorry.
So I was just thinking in that spirit, I was thinking she should read Jasmine Ward's Sing, Unburied Sing. You know, very popular hot book. Needs a popular hot actor to read the book.
That's
and
Viola.
Get her a Grammy.
Done.
Read that book, Viola.
Just read anything. Read a phone book.
And what is your prediction for next year?
I'm going to say that there will be a racial reckoning in Hollywood.
Ooh, I like that.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm going to let that be.
Wow, we're going to go vague. That's okay. Fine, I'll let you go vague.
A racial reckoning.
I wonder if it, like, are we going to revolt?
Well, there was a gender.
There will be a reckoning.
There was a gender reckoning.
So why not?
But I feel like...
I think the backlash would be much worse.
I don't know.
In Hollywood. I guess I specifically was thinking about Hollywood here.
Yeah.
In this situation.
That's appropriate. I don't know. The Sony hacks sort of, those revealed, like from a few years ago, those revealed some racist shit. But nothing really happened. Although I guess that's always the case.
Right.
Because there was, you know, other people have talked about sexual harassment before.
Right. I feel like it's going to be one of those things where everyone talks about as, you know, we all knew that this was true, but I think there's going to be, something will happen where it will actually make a difference.
I'm sure Weinstein will get ripped again on that front. Whew. Let's bring that racial reckoning on. I'm here for it. Antonia?
Well, I read today that executives, I think at ABC, have already talked about how they're going to change their direction with what they want. And if we're talking specifically about representation, I think that we are going to see a move away from showing people of color. I think that that's just going to be a reality.
Yeah. I think I was
was kind of wrong, to be honest. I don't know. I was actually thinking somebody was recently. I too liked.
She's gonna have it.
I didn't like love it, but I was like, oh my god, I know this neighborhood, and that's like fun. I've been to like Mark Morris dance classes. That was like enough for me. I was like sold. But that show was really controversial, and not everyone liked it. But there were so many good shows about the Black experience that people were like kind of stoked to have a mediocre Black show. You know, like people talk about like you really made it when that's like true. The mediocre ones right. are around, right. and I. Coco wasn't around last year, and that meant so much to me personally. I feel like this has actually been a great year for representation. But I think that it's been a great year for representation because you had to find the funding for that ahead of time.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like we're seeing the fruits of labor that happened a little bit a while ago. That being said, though, I am still kind of optimistic. I mean, I agree. I think there's going to be a racial reckoning. I hope that this... I don't know. I think it's really cool that what's happening right now in Hollywood about women speaking out is a revolution. It is amazing. It is crazy to think that so many women, I read Salma's article yesterday. She thought it was a given that she had to put up with that stuff to be an actress.
Salma Hayek's piece in the New York
Times. Yes, yeah. Salma Hayek's piece in the New York Times. I am very empowered by seeing so many women speak up. I hope that more women understand that they have more worth and are valued more, and I hope the same for people of color. And honestly, I thought there was so much good media this year, and I hope that that continues.
And what is your prediction for next year?
The racial reckoning.
We're glomming onto the racial reckoning. All right, Tiffany.
A lot of people, especially artists, are pissed, and all of these frustrations, all of these emotions, they're going to be channeled into their work. I am hopeful that in 2017, we'll start to see indie houses or the corporations that do care start to support filmmakers, artists of all kinds. I think there's going to be outstanding work. So it's yes, but also, it's not really specific. I think that's a very broad prediction I had last year.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
It's okay.
Yeah. So, and that sort of echoes what we've all just said anyway with all the work that's come out that's been frighteningly relevant.
I think you were right.
Yeah.
And I think that, maybe you didn't win the quiz, but you won the year. So...
I co-signed that.
Okay. Yeah. So, good work that's... At times, I felt saved my... life a lot of nights where I've really needed to feel like art was out there that really cared and mattered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's your prediction for next year?
Well, obviously, I'm going to have to agree with with both of you. I'm here for the racial reckoning. The one I had written down before that was it's more of a wish than a prediction. I just hope that a lot of people who are starting in Hollywood, sort of, and becoming prominent, like Gina Rodriguez, are forming their own production companies. And I really want to see their work in fruition, like now. I don't want to rush it if it's going to be great and it needs to take its time, but I'm just ready. I'm ready for these people to be the creators now, to be the people behind everything. It needs to happen.
Yeah.
Nice. And I'm last.
I'll just rattle off a few names. Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Chadwick Boseman, Forrest Whitaker, and Ryan Coogler in Black Panther. I'm not a superhero person at all. I really don't care about most of these movies. I'm going to go see Black Panther because it's fucking Black Panther.
Not this year.
I think I said that.
You can
that
still keep that for next year.
Yeah. I think I said that before realizing that it wasn't coming out till next year. But the trailer did come out, and the trailer was everything I wanted and more. Yes. Like, it was the blackety blackest, blackest thing I could ever imagine seeing in a superhero movie. And it was amazing. So I saw the trailer, and
the trailer does look so good.
I'm all about it. So, yes, and it's coming out next year, so we'll see how it is. So I'm glad I didn't make that. I mean, I could have made that my prediction for next year. But I'm going to make an actual prediction. Racial reckoning. But also, I think that A Wrinkle in Time is going to make $100 million at the box office.
Oh, yeah.
Opening weekend.
Opening night. Sorry. Let's go big.
I'm not a betting. I'm not a gambler. So I'm going to say not opening weekend. But I think it is going to overall take in over 100 million. Let's say second weekend. By the second weekend, I think it'll have crossed that line. Ava DuVernay is the first woman of color to direct a movie budgeted at 100 million. I've said this before, but it is a book that I remember not liking in elementary school when I read it. I don't really remember it except for the Tesseracts. But I'm going to go see this because it's Ava DuVernay. It's Oprah. Freaking Oprah. It's Reese Witherspoon. It's Mindy Kaling. It's Andre Holland from Moonlight. Mm-hmm. It's Chris Pine. This cast is ridiculous. I'm just rattling off names again. But again, the cast is amazing. I love the fact that we are seeing a black woman take on a sci-fi world. And I'm just all here for it. We saw what happened with Hidden Figures and with Girls Trip. I think it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Plenty of people of color are into sci-fi, more than people want to admit.
That's
my prediction. It's gonna cross the 100 million line. And that is our show. We did it.
Yay!
Verlyn's going to have to cut down so much of the shit. But it's okay. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. Happy New Year. Happy holiday. Happy everything y'all celebrate. I don't know why I'm evangelizing this, but everyone should listen to the Sia Christmas album because it's so
amazing. Really?
It's all original Christmas songs.
Oh. Not expecting you to say that.
Twist.
They're new.
She wrote all original Christmas songs it's just fun. There's one about drinking at Christmas. There's another one about how puppies are forever.
Wow.
And maybe just because I have a puppy.
That speaks to me.
But yeah. But she's like, puppies are forever, but will you still love them when they're old and can't walk anymore?
Oh my it's God.
That's real.
It's Sia. So anyway, happy holidays, everyone. And thanks for helping cap off another great year for Represent. And thanks for all the listeners for listening. And there will not be a show next week because we are taking a week off, finally. So we'll be back in the new year. And hopefully the new year will be better than this one.
Represent is produced by the lovely, amazing Verlyn Williams. Our excellent social media assistant is Marissa Martinelli. And our intro-outro music is performed by the sweet San Francisco funk soul band Midtown Social. Until next time.